Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry. Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Thank you very much for listening and for subscribing on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Well, it's been a month since Katie and I have come home, and time has really flown. We've mainly just been visiting friends and family. I guess we could have continued traveling for another month, maybe in India or somewhere in the area, but I really appreciate this time coming home and keeping all of those friendships and connections alive during the summer. And now we only have 2 weeks left until we move to Hong Kong. So stay tuned, and I hope to record a bunch more podcasts once we get to our new home. All right, let's get to today's guest. His name is Ryan Sin. And when Katie and I drove to his house in Minneapolis, I was a little surprised to see that it was almost completely empty. He was busy remodeling and putting the final few touches on it because he was about to sell it. And in 2 days after we recorded this podcast, he flew down to Jamaica. Ryan is now a full digital nomad. He really enjoys traveling, and especially traveling by bicycle, which he's planning to do pretty soon, as you'll hear in the podcast. So we had something in common to talk about right away. I think we met a couple of times years ago, but we haven't really had a long conversation ever, so it was great getting to know Ryan. I think we probably could have talked for 6 hours or more and kept it interesting, but as it turned out, we only had about an hour and a half before we had to take off. I think we made the most of it, though, and I hope you enjoy this conversation as well. So let's just get into it and jump into my conversation with Ryan Sin. Anyway, it's moving day.
Right.
So I was a little surprised to see this coming over, that your house is just empty.
It's just about totally empty.
What's the plan?
The plan is to... I've got a gig going to in Jamaica for the next little over a month, and then after that, the plan is to come back, and I haven't decided. I'm going to feel it out for the next month, but I haven't decided whether it's going to be heading straight down to Mexico from here or taking a train to California and then taking the train down, or I'm sorry, then biking down on a pedal bike to Mexico from California.
Oh, so you'd throw your pedal bike on the train?
And apparently you can do that now.
It is okay?
They said it's, somebody just said it's like $300.
Oh, okay, so you do have to pay more.
Yeah.
Yeah, Katie and I have done that in other countries, like in China, and we did it in Taiwan a bit, and Japan.
Yeah.
And there's always different rules, and we had fold-up bikes, though, so that helped a little bit.
I'm considering that. I met a guy when I did, so last time when I bicycled, was bicycling to Mexico the year before? I don't know, 2017, I think.
Okay.
And I met a guy who had a fold-up bike on the way that was heading to Mexico as well.
Okay.
And so when we got to Mexico this last time and I was biking through, I looked at doing, I just went to the bus station and said, hey, can we take our bikes on? And they called out the baggage guy and he's like, yeah, they'll fit.
Oh, all right.
And then throw them on. There's no charge, nothing. Just
nice.
You just cram it in there, take off the wheels,
uh-huh,
and set the bags beside it and they'll take you anywhere. So
as long as it fits.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, we got full-size fold-ups, which they were kind of the jack-of-all-trades but master of none. I don't think I'd do it again that exact way, but we learned a lot.
Thinner frames or narrower frames?
They're pretty much, they look like a normal bike.
Okay.
And they're mountain bikes and 26-inch wheels.
So yeah. Most filled up bikes only have like 20 inch wheels.
Really?
Yeah, they're real small wheels.
Yeah, this guy had a 10 speed that I saw with the 27. So the 20, yeah, the regular 700 cc wheels.
Okay. So. Huh. And it folded in half?
And it folded in three.
Oh,
which is crazy.
Oh, so maybe we can look into
it. It was like suitcase sized.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is good. It's just, we found it really bulky to carry when we had to carry it in a bag because it weighed like 30, 35 pounds. And
wow.
Just to carry that on your shoulders, it's for more than a small distance, plus the panniers that we had.
Right.
Carrying them into train stations. But for example, Taiwan has the trains all have a car just for bicycles, or that where there's a space in the car, I should say, where you can park your bike. Not fold up bikes, just regular bike. But then you got to buy another ticket. Whatever the price is, you double it. And if you put that bike in a bag, it's just luggage, so it's free.
That's cool.
I mean, we never got charged anything for carrying bikes on trains or even on a ship.
Wow.
Took a ship from Shanghai to Japan, and it was just like a suitcase.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so something to consider. But I think it's only something you want to do, I think, if you're going to be putting it on trains frequently.
Yeah, or buses or somewhere, or airplanes or whatever.
Whatever,
but
it is.
It's, yeah, I'm considering it, though. I mean, because the buses, it's really shocking to... So I've bicycled from Minneapolis to New Orleans with the intent to going down to South America in 2015.
Okay.
I left Minnesota in December, or I'm sorry, November, like November 2nd, which is not a good idea.
Too cold?
It was in the, like, about freezing.
Yeah.
Like, it would be up into the 50s during the day and rainy and sleeting, and then it would be, like, 30s at night. So it was just, it wasn't pleasant, the whole, until I got to Mississippi, I think.
Wasn't. That's quite a ways from here.
And it was still, going through Illinois was very cold the whole time. Mm. And you'd have nice days in the 60s, a couple days in the 70s, and then that would, kind of mess with you. You'd think, that cold weather was the anomaly, and it's not. It's the warm weather that was the anomaly.
Right. So are you camping along the trails then, or how do you do it here?
Yeah, I'll camp along the trails. I know there was a spot in Illinois. When it gets like below freezing at night, I'll try to find like a hotel there's a website called Warm Showers.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That you can use if you're cycling. And then there's couch surfing.
Okay.
I haven't had any luck couch surfing on a bicycle.
All right.
Yet, I think it's just because of you can't really plan your distance that well.
Yep, and they want to know a date usually.
Yep, so you're kind of like, I know Couchsurfing has that new feature where you can say, hey, I'm got a trip in this town from this time to this time.
Right.
But it's not, I don't think people check it the way that it's.
Yeah, I think it's.
It's changed.
It's changed. It's gotten a little harder to get a host. You have to try harder.
Yeah.
I used to just send out one message and then wait a couple hours and then I'd have a host.
Right.
I mean, really frequently. But
Warm Showers is pretty good still.
That's pretty small still, right?
It's just cycle tourists. It's only for cyclists.
Mm. And so they kind of get it that you might be a day late or something.
Right. And you're communicating the same way with the couch surfing, but it's just people. And yeah, I think people are more accommodating or understanding to that.
Right. I guess it makes it a lot easier if you have a phone too, a smartphone.
Right.
It's just, that changes a lot.
So I'm basically now, once this house is sold, I'm a total digital nomad. Like,
awesome.
I have nothing. I have you can try to get sponsor spots, right, with all this. I'm using physicaladdress.com in Vegas for five bucks a month to give me an address where I can have all my mail sent, and they scan it and they'll deposit checks and deal with everything for me.
Really?
For five bucks, and it's got an app on my phone.
Oh, okay. So that you know when a package came in or whatever.
Yep, and I can have it forwarded, or they can shred it, or they'll scan it, and they don't charge anything to deposit checks. So I looked at Earthbound, I think is the other one, and then there's a place in Texas and there's a place in South Dakota.
Okay.
And the Texas and South Dakota ones cater to RV people. But not like,
right.
I mean, they're expecting you to have like a plot there, or they're antiquated. Like, they were doing this for the RVers, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So there's still like somebody there that you have to call and go, do I have any packages?
Oh,
and it was interesting to learn that South Dakota if you have an address in South Dakota, you can get a driver's license in South Dakota without being there.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to change your state residency, which can be a tax thing to do.
Yeah.
So
how are the taxes in South Dakota?
They don't have any income tax.
Oh, nice.
So that's why.
Well, that's easy then.
Florida, Vegas, or Florida, Nevada, South Dakota.
Alaska, I think.
Alaska, that's maybe, and
Texas,
yeah. Texas is where the RV place is. So those don't have income tax, so they're the ones that they set up the
that'd be a natural spot for them.
Exactly.
Then. Right. Oh, I hadn't even thought about this stuff. I just use my parents.
Right, and
I guess I could give them $5 a month.
Right. It's just like, you know, people move, people change jobs, and it's like now I've got something that... When I started renting the house here in part of the house and was like having people send me images with mail, it was just cumbersome. It was a frustration point for them, and you're like relying on somebody to then like bundle up all your mail and mail it to you somewhere or it, and it's...
Yeah, that's a lot to ask of somebody.
Right. So I dug around, and like I've been using the service, I think, for a year, and it's been really good.
Oh, you've already been doing it even though you live here.
Yeah. Well, I don't even live here. I mean, I'm just here to fix the house and go.
Oh, I thought you were living here.
No. I've been here for 5 weeks. I drove... Okay.
Oh, wow.
We could backpedal,
so
right?
We just met. I mean, I think we met a couple years ago, but we
right,
really just met.
Right, at the couch crash.
So.
Like 2009, right?
It was that long ago?
Oh, because wow. So I met you, I think I met you and Katie at the Uptown VFW during, like, with Rosie.
Oh, okay.
And everybody during, well, maybe it's not 2009. I should correct that because I'm thinking this is 2015 for some reason. It's probably 2011 or 2012.
Yeah, probably around there. That's when I started doing these couch crashes more.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I met a guy there and we just hit it off. And he did couch surfing, and maybe a year later, he called me and said, hey, I'm getting married to a woman in Mexico, and she won't let me drive there by myself. I know you like doing crazy stuff. Will you like co-pilot with me to drive down to Mexico? And I'm like, sure, why not?
Yeah, that's
when?
Awesome.
2 weeks. Okay. Let's go.
Fantastic.
So we did that, and then I'm actually living at her house now. His wife's house in Mexico.
Ah.
Well, they live up here.
Okay.
So
You come over to this empty house and just fix it up? That's why you're here?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Did you buy the house though, or?
Yeah, I've lived, so I lived in this house. I bought this house in 1999. So
got
I was
it.
One of those tech nerds that, you know, like in high school or junior high, like everybody was like, "Oh, that's a nerd." So I was, when I was 14, I started my own business and incorporated or registered with the state. I did DBA then. So I just was my sole proprietorship at 14 and started doing computer business for people, and then moved up to the Twin Cities and worked contract work during the dot-com boom of the late 90s.
Sure.
At 18, 19, with no degree. Nothing. And like I'm working at major like Fortune 500 companies doing work.
That's amazing.
And it was crazy. And it's just a sponge for information. And everything there was changing so quickly. So it was, you know, you're kind of at that state. I went to college for a year instead of high school. And they were teaching you like COBOL and RPG and
C++.
Right, stuff that you would use if you worked in like the basement of like a medical insurance facility. I mean,
even in the 90s, COBOL was ancient.
Right, it's so 1997, that's what we were learning in college. And I said, I'm not going to go through 4 years of this. This is not what people are doing. Like, this is not what business is doing.
Uh-huh.
So I just went and started working for companies. And I worked for a major financial institution as a contractor. And they said, we really want you to work for us. And I said, I don't know. Okay, maybe. And they said, well, what will it take for you to get to work for us? And I gave them a number. Mm-hmm. And they said, okay. And so then I said, I thought, I've got money. Like, what do I do with it? I should buy a house.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So at 19, I buy this house.
Yeah.
And I've owned it for almost 20 years now. It'll be 20 years next year.
Wow.
But it's not gonna, I'm not gonna make 20 years on it.
Okay.
So it was crazy, and so I paid it off, and I've been like 3 years ago, I said, well, 5 years ago, I said, this is enough. Like, you know, you're doing like your passion, but it's just burning you out. Cause right. Being in the States is kind of a grind. It's like, there's just, it's production, production, production.
For sure. Absolutely. I totally get it.
Yeah. So at like 34 in there, really at like 31, 32, it started kind of like the idea started sprouting into my brain of like, what do I want to do after computer stuff?
Uh-huh.
And like 33, 34, I started to kind of work that way, tried to get somebody to take over my business. Didn't work, so I just worked with my customers to transition them off to other people. And I was going to leave this house empty, and like a week before I was going to leave, a neighbor called me up and said, hey, I'm getting a divorce. My wife wants to keep the kids in the same school district nearby. Can she just rent your house? And I was just going to leave it empty. So I'm like, all right.
Wow, that's...
serendipitous, yeah. Right?
It is. It is. Would you like some extra money every month?
So that's what happened. And so that's 3 years ago.
Oh, okay. So they've been living here and now they moved out.
Yep. Okay. So I really decided that I didn't want to babysit the house anymore.
Uh-huh.
2 years ago, last year. And so I thought, well, just I'll give them as much notice as I can. So I let them know at the end of last year that, hey, come the end of June, you know, like I'm going to repossess the property and sell it.
So, all right. So here we are.
So here we are.
Wow. Man, that, so you, are you, how old are you?
I'm 38. Oh, okay. I'll be 39 in a month.
Okay, so you're about a year younger than me.
Yeah.
Okay. I used to think that my life would be a lot different if I were a year or two older or a year or two younger. Because when I graduated, because I did computer science.
Okay.
I graduated in 2000, and the stock market crashed
right.
A couple months before I graduated.
Yeah, there's nothing there.
And I was like, whoa, okay. If I were a year older, I probably would have gotten into some .com or done something like what you did.
Right.
And my life would be very different. And if I were a year or two younger, I think... I would have graduated during a severe recession and
right.
After September 11th, and I probably would have had a hard time finding work. So, I just took a stable job,
right?
And
that worked out.
Well, yeah, financially.
Right.
I did that for 5 years. I was at IBM in Rochester.
Yeah, we probably know some of the same people then.
Oh, I bet we do.
Because I know
maybe
some of the guys that worked at one of the guys that worked out of Red Wing. That worked for I think he was doing IP stack work.
Mm.
So
only thing is, most of the people at this plant, this IBM plant in Rochester, work on the AS400.
Yeah, I did a lot of work on the AS400.
Yeah, and I didn't. I worked on WebSphere on software. So
I was just gonna say, you know, I went to Greensville, North Carolina, South Carolina, Greensville, South Carolina, right? And did I can't remember the name of the distributor, but I went to the distributor's facility to do a WebSphere conversation because the financial institution that I was at was using WebSphere.
Oh, all right.
Cool. And I remember they wanted, I'd already started working for myself again. So I worked for an institution for 3 years and then was like, I got to go back to work for myself. This is too slow. It's like,
okay.
I'm doing implementations of like 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 people, but it's like we're using, it's not new technology, you know, it's got to be stable technology.
Okay.
So, but it was cool to see what was coming out and what was going on. And so I got linked in with one of the vendors and they were like, we're going to send you to this conference on WebSphere.
Oh, all right.
And it was like, oh, I can't remember who gave the conference, but it was like 3 days or 5 days of, I don't know, I was not impressed.
Well,
it's Java. What are you going to
yeah,
say?
Right. It's enterprise Java, but that's pretty much it. Well, I did that for 5 years.
I'm not trying to dig into your stuff. It's a fantastic idea, but man, the scope of what WebSphere like does and what it can handle is just so it has to be so flexible and modular that it just makes it like this. Well, if you want to start doing one thing, you really have to understand the scope of all of it to get it configured to work.
Yeah, and the customers that we had were really big.
Right, you know, right.
Giant companies.
Exactly.
Right.
So they got a whole team of people that do WebSphere.
Right, a bunch in Rochester. But still, it was just, I don't know, a couple hundred people out of the thousands that worked there at the time. I mean, they've since sold off large parts of the building, the facility to other companies. So I don't know how big it is nowadays.
I don't think I have my WebSphere manual anymore. Here, I've been going through stuff and I haven't run across it. I think I tossed it last year.
So we can't geek out.
No. But it's a great idea. I mean, it was a fantastic tool, but man, it was just so, like, it's like, oh, you want to implement WebSphere? Well, what are you doing for the next 2 years of your life,
right? Sure. It's totally true. Anyway, so I'm wondering, when did the bicycling and travel bug hit you?
I was always traveling. Like, before I worked, before I took jobs and stuff, like, serious jobs, I was, when I was 18, my aunt gave me, well, when I was 17, my aunt gave me her car and bought a pickup truck. And I took her car and drove out to California. Just like, oh, screw it, I don't have a job. All right, I'm just going to drive out to California.
All right.
I'll apply for a bunch of jobs, and I'll just drive out there, and we'll figure it out, you know, when I get out there, when I come back, and I'll just do a little tour of the Northwest. So I've always been, like, traveling and wandering, and I've driven coast-to-coast Canada in the white Saab convertible out there.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
So I've gone and done the east side 1 year, and then the west side for 3 weeks the next year. That car I just drove, so I biked to Mexico 2 years ago, and last year when I flew back to renew my visa and check in on everything and at the house and stuff, when I went back this last year, I took the car, and I drove the car down there for 6 months.
Oh, how was that?
It's crazy. It's 5 centimeters higher than it was when I drove it down there,
because
they had to lift
bumps.
It for the topes, for
the
speed
topes,
bumps.
Right.
Yeah.
I forgot that's what they call them.
And I busted the motor mounts on it in Mexico, so I was fortunate enough to have a friend of mine was like, I'm coming to visit. And I'm like, hey, can I have somebody drop off a couple of these giant rubber motor mounts for you to put in your bag so that the mechanic can do the work but can't get the parts?
Sure.
And they wanted $60 to ship them down there. It's like, I'll just pay for your luggage, which is less than $60, and then bring down these motor mounts and a coolant reservoir, because I need that too. So that it survived.
Is there a big learning curve with driving
Mexico?
In Mexico,
it's so much easier.
It's easier. Okay.
So I've spent quite a bit of time in the last 6 years in Jamaica, and I will say that respectfully, once you've lived in Jamaica, like, and operated in like a daily societal, you know, mindset in Jamaica, you can function anywhere.
Okay.
It's chaotic. It's aggressive. Drivers pass on the right and the left at the same time. Okay. And so once you've, you know, operated in that kind of like just intense environment, everywhere else is pretty calm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, people are like, well, Mexico is really loud and there's dogs and there's roosters. And it's like, yeah, but you don't have like a impromptu dance hall, you know, event set up with speakers that are 25 feet high, like Phil Spector wall of sound next to your place, or like a Baptist church tent pop up for the weekend. You know, it's like, it's not that intense.
It's not as crazy, huh?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, driving can be so different depending on where you are.
And Jamaica's on the left.
Oh, it is. Okay.
So when I get back, I have to, you know, flip my brain and remember that it's narrow left turns and wide right turns.
Right, and we were just in India.
Right.
And actually South Asia for like 3 or 4 months. So India, Sri Lanka, Nepal, those are all left side.
Yeah.
So same deal, you come back. I think getting for me to get into a car and drive was not a problem. But,
right.
But walking was more of a problem because I'm used to
looking the wrong way.
Looking the wrong way.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel more self-conscious here. There's just more rules. Like, am I going to get in trouble if I cross right now?
Right.
Yeah. I don't feel so comfortable here.
And I would say that I agree. If we can dig into the U.S. in a polite way, it's sterile, and it's not like natural. It's not organic. Everything is like structured so cleanly for the most part that, you know, it's just organized. You have this inert feeling in you of like rigidity that you don't have in so many other places.
Yeah, it feels extremely organized here. The only country I've felt more on guard all the time,
yeah.
of like, am I pissing anyone off? The only other country is Japan.
Yeah, I would suppose it's the same kind of structure.
Yeah, where it's even more rigid, I think, than here.
But there it's like, I don't know Japan, but is it more like public shaming there? Where here it's more like authoritarian, like order enforcement?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Like, there would be disrespectful generally to society, and here it's like, we're just going to penalize you.
Yeah, in Japan, you're just, I think on a personal level, you're constantly thinking, am I getting in anyone's way?
Right.
And I think Japanese people think that way, too.
I would say...
Just stay out of their way.
Yeah.
It's a little different than here. Right, here it just feels like the police are always looking for you.
Right. Here, but I would say the people here, boy, this is just going to take a turn for the worse.
No problem.
I would say, like, here the people, you know, have a sense of entitlement in the way that, like, I pay my taxes, I do my things, I'm entitled to the road, I'm entitled to be in this line, I'm entitled, the courtesy of, like, what am I doing that affects other people doesn't exist in the same way. Like, I've really done a lot of introspection after coming back from the last 6 months in Mexico. Like, I used my visa up until a day before it expired, so 178 or 179 days.
All right.
Yeah. In Mexico, and when I came back, I came back with a friend of mine who came and helped me work on the house for 3 weeks, almost 4 weeks. And I just said, let's just talk about all the things that we notice now that we're here. So we just had this repartee back and forth about, like, what are you feeling right now? Like, we're out of this organic, like, chaotic, quote-unquote chaotic space of, like, lawless Mexico into, like, oh, there's curbs cut. All the homeless people are congregated in one tiny area in the city, you know? This side of the park is for people that don't have a home. It's... Like, you don't get that in other countries. It's like everything is just flows in and out of all the spaces.
Yeah, it's a great observation.
And it seems like it's very compartmentalized here.
Sure.
It's a segregation on, like, I get that people will say that there aren't classes in America, but I would say that there's a segregation based on perception, like, or qualifications, productivity, whatever you want to call it.
Huh, it's interesting. You always notice a lot of stuff when you come home, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just, has it always been this way? That kind of thinking.
And I think the reason that it's always been this way is the reason that you left, right? Or that you've looked outside of this to some degree. It's like...
Right.
There's rubbing some rough edges.
Maybe. It's a really cool feeling when you can look at your country from above.
Right.
And not just be like, oh yeah, well that's just how it is here.
Right. I mean, I don't think there's, like, by saying anything that it's a, this is better or this is worse. It's just an observation of, like, the amount of organization and structure that's in the United States. I mean, it obviously pays dividends in terms of, well, for now, or as it is now, in terms of productivity or in terms of coordination.
It's all about productivity here.
Yeah.
And I think we're really great at that. We're not so great at taking time off and smelling the roses, that kind of thing.
Right. I would say it's productivity in a very limited sense. Like, it's very interesting. The people, I would say, this is something that I've thought about for a while, is that you notice that you can tell an American because they'll ask you, like, what do you do? Like, what is your job?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know very many other societies where that is the question. That's, like, the first thing. That's your introduction.
Yeah, most countries, that's, like, question number 20.
Right.
Right.
Like, why are you here? Do you like it here?
Right,
yeah. Yeah.
What's your country like?
But you meet an American, and say, what do you do?
Exactly.
And it's not even, like, what do you do for work? It's just, what do you do?
And there's this underlying assumption it means work.
Right.
Because that's your
life.
It's
like, how are you productive?
Right.
How do you value add all of us?
Yeah.
Like, where can I put you into my value system? Blue collar, white collar, you know?
That's a great point. Right. You're looking to pigeonhole somebody.
Or make assertions, make assumptions, or just maybe generalize. Yeah, right.
I guess it's the same if you ask somebody where they're from.
Right.
It's the same kind of thing. You're trying to gauge, oh, what kind of person is this? How are they? How do I approach them? But it's just a different type of question. What do you do for a living?
Yeah. Yeah, but like, you go to Mexico and like, people will go, do you have a girlfriend? Do you have any kids?
Yeah.
I mean, those are the first questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, and you can, I think you can assess, if I can make a judgmental assertion, right? You can get some idea of the values of a culture or society based on the questions they ask people who they're unfamiliar with.
Oh, okay. Hmm. I've noticed those kind of questions in a lot of places too.
Right.
They want to know about family.
Yeah. And
it's a strange thing in a lot of societies to be a little older and not have children and just not have a girlfriend.
Right.
A little different.
Yeah, and I even think that, well, I don't know what I was going to say. I had an idea. I know what it was. It was because I think to some degree that would be something that was really difficult for them from having the conversations I've had with people in societies that are family oriented is like, you know, it'd be really hard for them to leave their family or to not have children or like how much they love their family or their kids or whatever. And to look at someone who doesn't have that. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a sense of, if I can make the assumption, there's a sense of loss or missing out on something.
You know? Right. You must be missing something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting too.
But they don't treat you any differently.
Right.
I get invited to all the Sweet 15 Quinceanera.
Quinceanera.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Yeah. Parties and stuff. And
that's cool.
Yeah. It's a, I've done wedding photography. So when I was bored with my computer stuff, uh-huh, I wanted to create a retail business for fun just to see, like, if I want to promote solutions to another business, how would I, you know, I should have an understanding of that to be able to promote it. Mm-hmm. So I went and started a photography business.
In Mexico?
No, here.
Oh, okay.
And shot a lot of weddings and all kinds of senior photos and all that stuff for 5 or 6 years.
Wow. Okay.
And so just thinking about that, it's like watching the quinceañera party, it's like, this is as elaborate as a wedding. It's crazy how how much of a production it is.
It's so important for them.
Right.
And yeah. Well, for people who don't know, it's in Mexico, specifically Mexico, when a girl turns 15, she, I guess you could say, becomes a woman at that age officially. It's a bit like a coming of age type,
yeah,
party.
That's exactly
could
what.
Could be bar mitzvah we have Sweet 16, we're going to say.
Right.
Many cultures have this, but it's super important in Mexico.
Yeah, and I really love, it was, like, I mean, it's something they all look forward to. It's,
yeah,
like, the big thing. It's kind of like graduating from the, oh boy, it could be a really bad analogy. It's graduating from the baby, like, the plastic baby to the actual baby, you know?
Right, yeah.
I mean, that's really what it's signifying, is, like, now you're ready to start moving towards having a family.
That's just reality.
And, I thought one of the cool things was like the girls come out, like whoever the princess is, right? Whoever's 15th birthday it is. Oh. She comes out in this elegant dress, vibrant color, you know, pink or purple usually. Maybe pink or purple usually is what you'd see, or light blue. Uh-huh. And then she's wearing like Chuck Taylors or like sneakers.
Huh.
And the big transitional ceremony, like the ring bearing part of it, right, is when one of her nieces or her younger sister brings out an ornate pillow with high heeled shoes on it. And then the parents go up and take off her sneakers, and that is the first time she's allowed to wear high heel shoes.
Oh, so now she's got real grown up shoes.
And she can wear makeup. Like, they're not supposed to wear makeup before the 15. It's like, it is the official, like, you are a woman now, with all the rights and responsibilities kind of thing.
Wow. Huh.
And,
interesting.
It was crazy. They did, they do the whole formal thing, and then they transition into dance party. And
so it is basically like a wedding.
It's a wedding. Like, you wouldn't know the difference of it not being a wedding other than that there's only one person.
Huh.
And she's got the five guys, or six guys, I should say, usually, or eight guys, that she dances with all of them. And they don't have to be, like, suitors. They can just be friends.
Sure.
And they lift her up, and they put her on a chair and parade her around the stage. And It's bat mitzvah wedding combination platter.
It's her day
thing.
In the spotlight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Mexico is so interesting because it's right next door.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of differences from Mexico and the U.S. and
huge.
We just don't, well, at least in the north where we are now, Wisconsin, Minnesota.
Right.
Yeah, we don't have this understanding.
And we've got plenty of, like, Mexican-born people around. Just down the block here, there used to be a Mexican restaurant owned by guys from Jalisco, one of the states of Mexico.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful people, Oscar, and I'm going to draw blanks on a lot of the other guys. But they're fantastic, and they still have a bakery just down the block here.
Yeah.
And they're all from Mexico. And what's interesting is when you're down there, like, I don't put on to people, like, why don't you go to the U.S.? It's such an amazing place. And so we'll talk about it maybe over beers or something. Like, they'll have family members that are in the U.S., and they're like, well, most people are like, why would I leave Mexico? I have the mountains, I have the sea, I have food, my family's here. I have no reason to leave. And it's interesting to see. This gets into a gray area, and this is a big generalization. But generally, I would say the Mexican population isn't materialistic. They are, but they're not. Like, materialism does not attach to happiness.
Okay. They're happy without possessions.
But they're happy with whatever.
Or with.
Anything.
Uh-huh.
Like, and I, you know, I don't, I think there's a different mechanism that's used to measure value here with acquisition and maintenance of possessions.
It's all about stuff, how much you have.
It's always kind of my chuckle point of thinking about coming back, and just think about lawns in the United States.
Oh, I hate lawns.
Like, well, people have all these lawns, right?
Yeah.
But you never see people in those lawns.
Yeah.
They just maintain them. But they don't use them for anything. Yeah. I mean, and it's a generalization, but I can tell you, we can look around right now, and I don't see anybody.
Yep.
In any of these lawns.
We can see about six probably from here. I don't see one person outside.
People use their porches with a grill, right?
Okay, yeah.
But people don't use lawns.
And it's this big space, and you got to take care of it. You got to mow it. And what's it doing?
And it's not even native.
No, and it's you're not growing any food on it. It's just, it's all for looks.
It's just,
I think they originated from France, maybe? From maybe Louis, one of the Louis.
Right. It's like, look at my ability to sustain something for other reason to sustain it.
I have a palace, and I can just waste all of this space on just grass. There's no reason to have this.
Right.
I'm that wealthy that I don't even care.
It's just interesting, because you don't see people. I mean, there are people who maintain lawns in Mexico. And but the general population doesn't have or maintain a lawn, or the lawn is really, really small.
Yeah.
I mean, like a 12 by 12 area.
maybe a little water fountain in the middle.
No, just like some cactuses or a couple flowers or some bougainvillea or something, you know, like some flowering vines.
Right.
But it's not, like, it's a place where you stand when you're eating food when your family's over.
Uh-huh.
And it's just crazy to see, like, the sheer volume of land that's occupied for nothing other than to present. Well, I'm being very general now.
It is. It is a huge generalization. But at the same time, it is true for the most part.
So I have another thing to, like, engage your brain in.
Yeah, go ahead.
In this. So the one thing that I noticed that was super, we'll use the word super, which was really interesting once you looked at it, is how in America generally, there are all these, like, there's all this public space. And you think about another country, like, if you're looking at public space, there's what? There's birds, there's dogs, there's cats, there's people, there's kids. You look at all this public space here, it's just cars. There's no people. The landscape doesn't have people.
I was so freaked out the first time I came home from South America, because I'd been gone like 10 months, and I'd never been away that long. And I came home to Miami, and I jumped on this train. After, like, walking down this giant boulevard with no sidewalks and, like, dodging cars and running for my life, I was like, oh, my God.
Everything's integrated on top of each other.
Oh, and then I got on the train, and we went right past this giant park with, like, baseball stadiums and stuff, or baseball fields.
Yeah.
No people anywhere. I was like, oh, my God, what happened to all the people?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
We drove through Denver. We never saw any people. Yeah. I mean, like, we stayed in Denver for 2 days on my drive back.
It's hard to even explain to people if they haven't left the country ever. Like, especially Latin American cities, they all have, at least in South America, they all have...
In Mexico, too.
A Plaza de Armas, they call it.
Yeah, I mean...
They might have different names in Mexico.
Central. Yeah, they have a plaza, yeah.
Right. There's always a central plaza in every city.
In every
square,
city.
And, or every town, even. And the people all live around it. And everyone comes out at night and gets together and hangs out and the kids play. And they're always really busy spaces.
Right.
And it's just a really nice communal place. It's where you can go to watch people.
Right. And engage in the community.
You meet up with people. Right, right.
And what do you go... I mean, here, there's just... Everything takes... Well, I shouldn't... I'm being general again. But there's so much that takes a car.
Yeah.
That you segment, you know, it's... what is it? Jill Joyce? Is that Jill Joyce? The Life and Death of American Cities?
Oh, I don't know this.
Getting that right.
Okay. I'll look it up later.
Jill Joyce... But she was one of the champions, as I understand it, for Greenwich Village, saying, don't ruin this by, like, organizing it. Like, let the stuff kind of just stay and churn organically.
Oh, okay.
And because she said the suburban stuff just kills, like, community, because you subdivide areas by roads. I know... One of the conversation pieces for Minneapolis, where we're at now, is like when they picked where they ran the interstates, they ran them through neighborhoods of people who were economically challenged. And they ran like 35 through working class neighborhood stuff, not through affluent neighborhoods.
Okay.
So they fragmented people who were neighbors. Because I mean,
literally,
like,
divided them.
Right. Yeah. And they broke neighborhoods up.
Right.
Wow. And, she just talks about a lot of that in destroying the ability for people to interact with each other.
Something we're often missing here. I mean, Katie and I just lived in Beijing for 3 years, and we lived about a block away from a park. And Beijing is pretty chaotic, too. Probably not as chaotic as, like, Jamaica, or definitely not as much as India, but there's a lot of traffic, there's a lot of people, and a lot of stuff going on all the time. But this park... They didn't allow bicycles in, they didn't allow cars in, and there was a track around the edge of it, roughly 400 meters, but not a straight track, just going through a forest and a path.
Hmm.
And all the old people would come and walk along it and hang out and talk to each other while they're walking. And in the middle, you'd have at least three or four different groups that would get together every night, and someone would bring a speaker, and everybody would dance together. And nothing complicated or anything, but just some light exercise.
Right.
Sometimes you'd have people would bring a musical instrument and just jam in a band.
That's awesome.
Not exactly like you'd think of here, but
right.
Chinese people in a Chinese sounding music, and
right.
people would sing, and other people would come and just watch them, and it was fantastic. We'd go there 3-4 times a week just to get away from the city,
right?
The
social
the traffic, and
thing.
It was a great social thing. And there's no money involved; you just go,
right?
And it's that is largely missing in this country. Not completely, but
right.
I'm trying to think. We used to live in Madison too, in Wisconsin, and maybe the equivalent would be the Terrace, the
okay.
Union Terrace.
Is that the big like boulevard?
It's right. No, it's right on campus.
Okay, yeah, I don't know that one.
See, this is the great thing about a college town is some college towns do have these.
The pavilion
spaces.
Kind of walking space and.
Right, there's a big walking path along the lake, and there's right on Lake Mendota, which
yeah.
is a pretty big lake. It's about, if you go around it along the edge, it's maybe like 26 miles.
Okay.
And circumference. You sit there right on the edge, and there's live music all the time, and there's beer for sale there, and
right.
you don't have to buy anything. You can just go and sit, since it's a public area. And it's a great meeting place. Just that'd be the one area I can think of in any city I've lived in the United States.
I mean, they have like Pearl Street in Boulder, Colorado, if you've been there.
No, not specifically.
But it's, yeah, I mean, I could think of Pearl Street in Boulder, but you can't just sit and drink beer. I mean, it's
okay.
not like, yeah. But I can see what you're saying. In when I was living in Puerto Vallarta and like so many other cities in Mexico, if they're bordering a river or a waterway of some kind, it's
yeah.
public space. And there's people walking it and playing music and hanging out. And
I like that a lot.
Yeah, I do too. And it's there's nowhere to do that here. If you go to the park and play, you're going to be the only person playing. Not to say that somebody shouldn't start something.
Sure,
but
yeah.
You know, so, you know, it's not... It's not what the community desires, if that's the way to
right.
to put it.
Right. I guess we value just walling ourselves off for some strange
private
reason.
Private space, right? Privacy.
And it's so strange that I don't know, the longer I'm away, the more strange I think my own country is. It seems so backwards that when you're really poor here, you live among a lot of people. And then as you get wealthier, you just wall yourself off more and more. And
right.
Like you're a middle class person, you live in a nice suburban area like this.
Yeah.
You have your own home. And then you get richer and you have a bigger yard. And you get really rich, you have a wall around your house so no one can even see in it.
Right.
And you're just like in this castle by yourself or just with your wife
Stuff.
And children and your all your possessions. Like
well,
look
some
at
of
me.
Your possessions.
Don't
the other
look
ones
at me,
are,
actually.
Yeah, right.
I'll have a party someday, and you'll come over and see all the stuff I have, and you'll admire me.
We've gone evil on a beautiful afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's so weird. Everybody's not like that, but I would say there are exceptions, and they are definitely exceptions.
There is definitely a huge counterculture to that here, too.
Yeah.
Like, we were just at this festival, and it was just fantastic. Just the people there were so nice, this music festival in Eau Claire. And large crowds gathering to watch music, to watch people make art. I love it. And there was no pushing or shoving, and everyone's just so nice and
right.
pleasant. And it was great.
Yeah. I mean, but that's like the time out. It's like, yeah, I have to take an excursion to have fun and
yeah,
laugh
it
and
is.
Smile.
It totally is.
It's not like every day is laughing and smiling.
Yeah.
It's like I work to have fun.
Yeah.
Instead of I'm having fun and then I go to work.
Right. Now that I've put in 6 months of work every single day, I can take off three
two
days.
2 weeks.
Or two, yeah, if you're lucky.
It's
right.
just, it's so different. Yeah, so I kind of want to, I don't want to, I'm not abandoning the culture. I respect so many aspects of the productivity.
Uh-huh.
But it's just, I don't think it's healthy for me. Like,
sure.
I lose weight when I go other countries. And I eat and drink and have a great time. More as much as I do here.
Uh-huh.
But then here, when I'm here, it's just like there's this intensity to people. Like even standing in line or finding a parking spot, it's just like there's just this constant, it almost feels like it's a culture or a space between everybody where it's not intentional, it's subconscious or unconscious, but it's this perpetuation of just this friction, just this pressure. Mm. And so, I mean, you know, one person is intense about something and it transmutes that, you know, I shouldn't transmute it, it transports it or transmits it to other people, and this intensity is like mirrored. And so you have, you know, one person standing in line that rushes to get to the checkout, and that creates, you know, everybody else responding in the same way. And now it's just kind of, that's the temperature of the environment.
Yeah, you've ratcheted it up.
Because you come back and I'm driving like just cruising, relaxed, and people are like swerving around me, honking, yelling, and it's like I'm not going under the speed limit. I'm just not that intense. And people do it in Mexico, but they don't do it with, I don't know, there's just a different intensity to it.
Yeah. Well, I know Mexico a little less, but I can say in China, because I've been there so long,
right?
People do idiotic things when they drive constantly. Right. They're just constantly doing stupid bullshit like you wouldn't believe. Driving the wrong way. It's just completely normal.
He had to be
normal somewhere.
That's just how you need to get there.
Yeah, you just do it.
There's people like accept it.
And, yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's just... Everyone's constantly doing stupid things, so when it's your turn, you can do something stupid.
Right.
And no one's going to get mad at you. And everyone is constantly prepared for you to do the dumbest thing possible.
People are attentive.
Yeah. So I noticed, when I was in Mexico, I noticed is if you're at a red light, if there's not a cop controlling the intersection, well, you just go. But if you, let's say you're courteous and stop.
Right.
When the light turns green, first you look left, and then you look right, and then you go.
But then you wait two more seconds, and somebody goes.
Yeah, right. But here, the light turns green, and people just hit the gas. They're not even looking.
Right.
So if someone does do something really stupid, that's when an accident happens.
Right.
And the accidents can be severe, because people drive so fast here.
Right. And they're not, there's a lack of attention. The cell phones, man.
Oh, God. That's so scary for me.
Yeah.
I just hope we get to the point where cars can drive themselves before we just all kill each other and
from
our cell phones.
Me too.
Hopefully pretty soon.
Yeah, it's definitely a culture shock in terms of the... And I think that gets back to where I was saying entitlement. Uh-huh. Because it's like, how dare you... Like, everything's like... What I always try to think, even for myself, you know, is that I'm not that important. Like, somebody isn't cutting me off. Mm. Like, they don't care about me. They're doing their thing. And like here, people are like, no, that person cut me out. It's like, I don't think they probably didn't notice you, you know?
Right. Maybe they just didn't see you, or maybe they're just in a hurry.
Or they're doing their thing.
Yeah.
But it's like this personal grievance, this entitlement, personal grievance thing that goes on here that just, it, what do you want to call it? Stirs the pot, poisons the well before any communication happens. And I feel like traveling abroad, you know, helps like deprogram you from that, where you walk up to, you hit somebody's car, I don't know, I'm just making things up, like I was biking down the side of a road in Morelia in Michoacan, Mexico, and like I'm trying to get up to the light and it's constant traffic, and I didn't navigate this guy's mirror and I bump it.
Okay.
And I'm like, I stop and I'm like, you know, lo siento, es mi culpa, I'm sorry, right? And he's just like, no problem.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, I apologize. And here, like, somebody would just be like, how dare, like, are you too stupid to know, like, how to, you know, you shouldn't be on the road, get off the road.
Right.
It's like, it's just a different, it's a weird attitude. I was just on... We don't talk about Facebook, right? But I was just, I biked through Mexico. I did weeks on the bicycle in Mexico and no problems. Like a few like close people, but not anything different than here. Mm-hmm. And people are really courteous and kind about it. And here it's like people throw batteries at you. People like scream at you, get off the road. You know,
really?
It's just like you can't, like I was talking about Facebook. I was just, saw my friend complaining about people riding in front of him on a bicycle on Facebook. And I shouldn't say all, the majority of the comments were like, well, you need to throw something at them to get them off the road. And I'm like, this isn't something to joke about.
Yeah, that'll kill
like people.
Them.
We're like, oh, we just go up close to them and slap them. And I'm like, this is not, and it wasn't
really.
Like, this is a joke.
I mean, yeah, that's a good way to murder somebody.
Yeah.
That's a person.
Right. And it just, it's just a weird, like, I think that's the part of the disconnection.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, and like you say, I think people in other countries are more observant of, just, you have to be. Is it a horse? Is it a goat? Is it a cart? Is it a kid?
Sure.
Is it, what's going to be on the road when I come over this hill?
Like, right, right.
No idea.
In India, it's most likely a cow.
And is it turned over? And is it blocking the entire road? And there's a fiery accident, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, you drive like that. And here, it's like, no, this is my road.
How
this
dare
is my
you get
lane.
In my way?
Like,
right.
So.
I guess that probably just goes back to maybe the 50s, maybe before, when it's just, we're just so built around cars in this country. Everything's car oriented.
I was reading about that in a book because I was looking at, they have, what do they call them? Sacraments? Not sacraments. Covenants. They have covenants when, so I have the abstract for this piece of property that we're sitting at, and the abstract goes back to when the property was recognized by the state of Minnesota, when the state of Minnesota was formed. And it goes through all the transitions of ownership, like from farmland to farmland to farmland to bank loan to farmland, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
And in 1953 or 57 or something like that, they, people who bought this property formed a covenant, which they call it, that they set rules for how this property will be used. Like no nuisances of your neighbors, no houses costing less than $12,000, no temporary living arrangements on this property ever, like not even for a day, no tents, no shanties, no.
Oh, okay.
And it's all outlined in this covenant. Like you can buy this property and here's the rules you have to follow.
Right.
And so I was Googling about covenants because the covenants for this property expired in 1999. And so the city overlaid their ordinances over these original covenants to, you know, stopgap any space in there. Because what would happen is the covenants would expire and then people would do whatever they wanted. They'd build a mansion on a house, you know, right up to the property line.
McMansion type thing.
Yeah. But I was reading a book about it and they were talking about how the intentional community, the suburban stuff, created the dependence on the cars. Because it wasn't like a dense urban spread out, like growing up block by block.
Yeah.
It was huge plats of land were developed with tracts of 50 houses out, you know, 5 miles from a job. So you had to get, and there's no public transportation,
no.
You know, in the 50s or whatever. So people have to get cars.
And no shops nearby.
No.
Nothing.
So you go into the city to do everything.
No matter what you want to do, you have to buy a car. You have to get in your car and drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that was freedom.
Right? It was away from all the other people. It started at least then.
Right.
But they said that fed a lot of the car culture. I mean, coupled with the streetcar, you know, purchasing of the streetcar companies in St. Paul and then dismantling them, that kind of stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, my dad told me, he grew up in Milwaukee in the 50s, and there were streetcars then. There were trains going all over, and they just ripped them all out.
Yeah. They get bought by, you have to look at who bought the ones that was around Milwaukee, that were around Milwaukee. But here I thought it was GM. I can't remember. But the car companies are buying the streetcars and then just closing them.
Oh, okay.
So you remove the competition out of it.
Wow, that's straight out of Rockefeller's playbook.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like you want the railroads, you want the oil, you want whatever.
You just
buy up stuff and shut it down.
Wow. Huh.
And they're putting them back in.
That reminds me, we have a friend who lives, if we know him from couch surfing, you probably know too, Joe. He bought a house in St. Paul.
Yeah.
By
the school or whatever.
Well, it was in a bad neighborhood or quote unquote bad neighborhood and fixed it up and wanted to make this intentional communal living center.
What do you call it? Wonderland?
Yeah, that or something like that. Or Dreamland.
What was the name? Dreamland, I think it was. Yeah, something.
And he ran into some problems. I don't know if he ever got this resolved because I haven't talked to him in a long time.
Yeah, he was in the city pages about it because they wouldn't give him an occupancy for the amount of people because you had to be family, right? You couldn't have five people that weren't family living in the same house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, this is supposedly the land of the free. And you're telling me the government's going to prevent you from living in a home with people who you're not
aren't
family.
Related to? Yeah.
Right. Like, what? And you're okay with that?
Right.
Like, this is the society you want?
Yeah, I think they were trying to push him into, well, I don't know. I talked to him about that a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But I think they were trying to maintain that status rate for apartments and not in single family. It was zoned, you know, as occupancy for a single family.
Uh-huh.
And so, oh, I live next to an
helicopter
airport.
Here. It's just, yeah, certain rules about here. I just, I love some things about the United States. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
I mean, I love some of our freedoms. Like, we have freedom of speech, and you can say whatever you want about the government. It's,
yeah.
That is so fantastic.
And there's a lot of places that don't.
Right. Like where we used to live. you just don't talk politics there.
Right.
And you can talk about it freely here. I love that. But then we're lacking a lot of basic freedoms, like
right.
the ability to live in a house with whoever you want to live with.
Right. Well, there was a lot of time where it wasn't like, you couldn't live with somebody you weren't married to.
Yeah, like the government, it's their job to get into your bedroom and tell you what to do with your own life.
Well, I think, you know, we're off on so many tangents, which is great.
No problem.
But I think it's, I think there's an understanding there somewhere that it's like this was a Christian, it's not a Christian nation, but it was a puritanical society.
Sure. Yeah.
Like when you get into anything sexually related, there's just a denial that, you know, people put parts into other parts to do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just not an acceptable, you know, understanding of how life exists.
Or there's one way to do it and only one.
Right.
And if you're not within these very narrow parameters, then you're a bad person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, that makes a hard worker maybe, right? But I don't know necessarily. I mean, we're definitely seeing it. Like in Mexico, you could, like, it isn't, there's an appropriate time for sexual things and there's an inappropriate time for sexual things.
Yeah.
But the default is typically it's appropriate in some way, shape, or form. I mean, but respectful, whatever you want to call it. But here it's such a base notion that you can't, it's hard to recognize it being from here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I don't think I fully can understand how strange this place seems to people that come from like France or come from, England's not a great example, or Spain or Italy,
yeah.
You know, where there's just or even Mexico to some degree, or any Spanish, I mean, I'm sure Latin America to some
sure.
degree. It's conservative, but it's not ignorant.
You know, yeah.
I guess that's the...
You can flaunt it.
Right.
Although I met this woman who, I think she was Swiss, but anyway, she was traveling in Brazil for a long time. And the women there wear, they call it fio dental, like dental floss.
Oh.
Which is a string
what
bikini.
Was that?
Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
So they'll wear this to the beach. It's no problem to wear your dental floss bikini. Or if you're a man, you wear the little tiny
Speedo,
yeah,
whatever.
Speedo.
Yeah.
And she just thought, well, this seems overly sexual to me. I'm just going to go topless or naked and whatever. So she just didn't wear anything.
Huh.
Or maybe just wore a bottom, I forget. And she almost got into some really serious trouble.
In Brazil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of strange. You can have that little thin piece of cloth covering your top.
Right.
And that's fine, but you remove it and now you're in trouble. And it almost seems worse when there's just a little thin strip of cloth. It's so natural to just be naked.
Right, right. No, I mean, yeah, it's the same in Mexico. It's like you can wear just next to nothing. And if you're a foreigner, I think there's even more of an understanding. But people dress really, really provocatively, if that's the word. It's like, this is who I am kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is it.
This is a much bigger struggle if you're a woman traveling too. Like Katie struggled with this in India, just wearing a tank top. I mean, women don't wear that stuff in India.
Right.
So they wear saris. They wear such beautiful clothing. but they're usually covered fairly head to toe.
Right.
And these are the Hindu women.
Yeah.
Muslim women probably cover themselves a little more even. But not that it's illegal to walk around in a tank top, but it's just not something women typically would do in most parts of India.
It's like the Japanese thing where it's just culturally not.
Yeah, it'd be like inappropriate.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's a bit of a struggle there. Like, she wants to be really respectful, but it's also 115 degrees outside.
Right.
And we're not used to that.
Yeah, there's a definitely, I mean, there's a balance in a lot of stuff. Like in the States, so this gets into all kinds of crazy personal stuff. Uh-huh. But I just, like, when I'm biking, I just wear enough clothing to, like, stop chafing. I mean, and beyond that, I don't care.
Okay.
And it's like I go to Jamaica or I go to Mexico, I can't wear, like, jorts. Like, I can't wear short jean shorts. Mm. Like, it's just, it's a different, people will approach you differently and treat you differently and talk to you differently. And
yeah.
And I can't imagine, like, how it is for women in so many, I can kind of imagine.
Yeah, it's a bit strange because there is a much, generally speaking, women have a much broader range of clothing that they can wear
right.
that's acceptable, but then at the same time they don't. Like, they, right. as long as you're covering these parts, then you're okay.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think both genders are objectified. They're just objectified in different ways.
Mm, right.
And, like, you know, it's not such a big deal for what men wear or how men wear things because it's like you're a worker, you're producing something. Like, that's you're a cog, you're supposed to be gritty, dirty, unkempt, you know.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
You're, but women, it's like it's this status thing. It's like you're, you know, the affluence is in not working, and for men the affluence is in working.
Oh, wow, that's a good point. Huh.
And I mean, we're doing different things here, but I'd say in general cultural yeah. things, I think you'd see it that way. Like, you look at women who, like, have fingernails that are, like, 6 inches long. I mean, that's not a productive thing to do.
Right. They're almost making a statement then.
Right, but like, look, I don't have to do anything that would require me to
yeah.
use my hands in that way or whatever.
And in India, more than any other country I've been to, they're really into whitening their skin.
Mm.
So there's all
bleaching
yeah, well, maybe not bleach, not permanent bleaching or anything like that.
Jamaica, that's what they do.
They do it?
And it's
oh,
pretty,
man.
It's pretty brutal.
Oh.
Because the lighter your skin, the more affluent you are.
Yep. Yep. And
which is crazy.
Right. And there's even big billboards with the whitest looking Indian you've ever seen on a picture.
They do that in Mexico too. I'm like, why are there white people on these advertisements?
Right.
This is not your market.
Yeah.
With the kids out at the restaurant, like, and they're all like white looking, you know, or I would use white as like a European based,
yeah,
you know,
lighter
Anglo,
skin. Not
yeah.
literally white, but
right.
peach or beige,
right.
whatever you want to say. But just being out in the, if you're working out in the fields all day, your skin gets dark. And that means you're a low-class person.
Right.
That's just an indication for them.
They have the same thing in Mexico. Hmm. They have the cultures, the ranchers, and the people that live in, like, Veracruz and in the northern, in the desert areas. And then you have those people, which I can't remember the name they used to call them. It's like fat cowboy, short cowboy. I can't remember what the slang is.
Okay.
But they have a name for the darker skin Mexican people that are like farmhands and ranchers and rural people.
Uh-huh.
That's what the Mexico City, like Guadalajara people have. And then they have another, I mean, they have another term. Well, they just call them indigenous for the indigenous population that's mm-hmm. there too. There's definitely three different groups of people in Mexico.
Yeah, got it. I like how they have that word in Spanish, indígena.
Indígena,
because
yeah.
here it's just Indian or Native American.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them seem quite right to me.
No. I mean, Canada uses indigenous too. Or first people, I think.
They call them first families or first
yeah.
people.
But yeah. indígena.
In the Guianas, they call them Amerindians.
Hmm.
And that's interesting. That So it's not like American Indian, but...
I think Guyana's by Venezuela up on the...
Yeah, up there. Just a couple words in Spanish that don't exist in English that I can appreciate. Like, that's one of them. And estadounidense is another one. Like, United Statesian would be roughly what it means.
Yeah, nobody ever uses that. You just say Norte Americano.
Oh, in Mexico, right. Yeah. Norte Americano, like North American. But then... North, like, I guess it's north of Mexico, but
right.
Mexico is also North America.
It is. And when you tell people that there, they respect you that much more when you actually acknowledge that that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I mean, if you go to, like, Argentina and you say you're American, then you're like, well, so am I.
Right.
What are you talking about?
Right.
So you have to say...
I've watched people have that discussion, and it's just like the Captain Kirk or Captain Picard face palm. Right. Like, really? You're going to, like, argue who's an American and who's not?
Oh, I know.
And you're not even in your country? It's not a... Not a...
Well, a lot of the world gets taught that there's different numbers of continents. This is something I never knew till I traveled. Like, we just know for a fact that there's 7 continents.
Right.
But not everyone learns the same thing, and they're not wrong. They just have a different way of looking at it. North America and South America, until the Panama Canal was created, we're the same. We're connected.
Right.
So a lot of places teach that that's just America.
Well, they're still connected. It's just under the ocean.
Right, yeah. That's a good point.
But right, yeah.
And Asia and Europe, I don't know why those are separate. There's some mountains. And
Maybe there's a divide in the mountains.
Yeah, maybe
there's
tectonic plates or whatever.
Because, you know, there's a tectonic divide through Minnesota. The Continental Divide runs through Minnesota. I've
really?
Had that argument, yeah, with people.
So are there earthquakes here?
There was an earthquake in the early 19th century that came up and rang bells in southern Minnesota. I know they talked about.
Oh,
it went up through Missouri and through Illinois.
Huh.
Yep. Because of the tectonic, it's Buena Vista. There's a ski hill. I lived in Bemidji, Minnesota for a while. Okay. In Bemidji, Minnesota, there's a ski hill. It's called Buena Vista, and it's on the Continental Divide. I mean, it's only 600 feet at that point, right? Or 450 feet or whatever, but it's part of the divide. So the rivers run one way on one side and one way on the other side, kind of thing.
Huh. Splitting the whole continent in half.
Right? That's why you've got the... I might be over-speaking, but I think this is part of the reason why the Red River runs north into Canada.
Is because of this divide?
Because of the divide.
Huh. Okay.
So, like, yeah, what is the deal with the... Like, because it's just like the Rocky Mountains, where everything on the east of the Rockies, right, runs into the Gulf, or...
Sure,
and then everything west of the Rockies
thing.
runs into the Pacific.
These kind of points are interesting to visit sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
I was reading a while back about this guy or family who lived in Nebraska... in this little, not even town, just like one farmhouse with just farm fields around them. They kept getting people coming up to their house. Like once a week, someone would bang on their door and go, hey, what are you, like really pissed off at them.
Yeah.
And they're like, dude, I have no idea who you are or why you're mad at me.
Those are my favorites.
Right, and it's just this weird thing. I'll have to look up. I think maybe this is on Radiolab or some podcast I heard. But they had no idea what was going on, and they were getting threatened. And they're just like, no, I'm a 75-year-old farmer. I have no idea who you are or what your business is. Please just leave me alone. And he got the local sheriff involved, and the sheriff had to send cops to protect him. And they're trying to figure out what the hell is going on here. And they brought in a computer expert, and it turned out one of the phone networks had this thing where, I probably won't say this exactly right, but when you're connecting to a network, mm-hmm. you need an IP address or maybe just a location, and if it, again, I see it a little bit puzzled.
No, I'm not puzzled. I'm thinking
probably just
through,
saying it wrong.
I'm thinking through what you're explaining to maybe I can fill out the
Yeah, maybe
gaps.
You can fill in the blanks here for me, but there's like a default setting where if it can't find your location, it just goes to the default and gives that, and it probably should have been somewhere like all zeros, so it's obvious, or the middle of the ocean, But someone made it.
I remember that.
Someone made it into the very, for this company, just happened to make it into the very center of the country. Like if you held up the whole country on your finger, it would balance on this point.
Right. And people would drive there because of their GPSs or their maps and stuff, right?
Yeah. And then they'd...
I remember something about that.
Okay. And then... But this guy's house wasn't exactly on that point. I think they just rounded it off to the nearest degree of latitude or whatever. So he lived on that point. And... Someone would have a problem with their phone company or some package not getting delivered or any number of things.
Right. And
I mean, enough people were having these kind of issues that 99% of the time they just got the location.
Right.
However it was done. But that 1% of the time, the location was defaulted to right on this guy's house.
I remember that. I don't remember the specifics, but I do remember... It was a piece of software. It was like a latitude, longitude thing. Mm. I don't remember what it was exactly, but I...
I'll find the story again.
And it was somebody who was like, I don't even use computers. I don't know why this is happening to me. I remember reading that on Slashdot years and years and years ago. Huh. Yeah. That was...
Interesting stuff. There's some point in Wisconsin, now that I think about it, It's got some significance of latitude and longitude, like exact numbers.
Hmm.
Maybe it's 45 degrees north and 90 degrees west or something like that.
Could be, yeah. And
there's like, I mean, it's all arbitrary. It's just humans created these numbers. But
right.
There's only four of these points or something in the world, and three of them are in the ocean. And
there's one on land, and it's in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and so they've got some monument for it. I like that kind of stuff.
It's always kind of interesting trivia to change people's moods or to break the ice with people. Do you know we're standing on such and such? Or,
right.
Yeah.
If you can go there and see it, it's
right.
It's like this means something to us just because we made our maps this way.
Right. And I thought the longitude and latitude weren't like, I mean, were arbitrary in the sense that because of the, it's not the Magellan map, whatever style map, it starts with an M.
Mercator?
Mercator map. It's like stuff gets bent in such a way that, like the longitude, they just made it work for the maps they were using, but it isn't actually.
Right. Like, well, the only way to get an accurate map of the world is with a globe.
Right.
And you can't just take that and flatten it out. It won't work.
Right. That's not how a circle works.
No.
Or not how a sphere works.
Right.
I watch Vsauce.
Oh, yeah. They did that with a beach ball, didn't they?
I think they did it with a beach ball. Or they did it with a cone. And they took the cone, right? And they said, we'll draw a straight line. And the straight line looks like it's going like this.
Uh-huh.
But it's actually a straight line around the cone. And it comes... Like, you start here. And when you go around the cone in a straight line with a straight edge, you don't go in a circle around the circumference of the cone. You come out down below... or above, depending on which way you're going, because a straight line on a cone is a curved space. It's not it's really interesting. But I think Vsauce did an episode about the curvature and how to measure maps and work with maps because of that exact reason. It's like you can't flatten it out and make latitude and longitude work because goof this up maybe, but it's like when you take and you draw that straight line between two points on a globe, it curves.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't do that on a map because. No. But if you put it down on a flat map on a globe, it wouldn't be like the shortest distance between two points when you've done it.
Right. If you ever take a really long flight, maybe not north south so much, but
right, they don't just fly straight there.
It doesn't look like it.
No.
But it is.
But it, right.
I think a lot of people, I get the impression, think the reason it curves is because they want to avoid flying over populated areas in case the plane crashes, but I don't think that's the reason. I think it's just a great circle thing.
Well, what are we going to do about the flat earthers?
Oh, right. Let's not get into that.
Let's not.
Actually, Katie just gave me the signal. We have to get going pretty soon, but
all right.
I just want to hear about Jamaica before we
Sure.
wrap
what do you want
up.
To know about well, Jamaica?
We said you're going there for a month for a gig. What's,
so,
what's that all about?
Yeah, I met, I was couch surfing. So I went to Jamaica on vacation and I said, this was 2011 maybe. I went to Jamaica on vacation and said, you know, I just want to take a break. Like, I just want to get out of here. I'm going to do an all-inclusive thing. I don't want to think about anything. I just want to eat and drink and sleep and be happy. And so I went to a resort in Jamaica that was all-inclusive and had a fairly miserable time.
Okay.
And I'd never been to one before, and I'll never go to one again.
You got to try it once.
But I tried it, and I'm like, "This is, the food isn't good. Like, I feel sick. It's just, it's weird." So I went to, I went to the front desk and I said, I want to leave. I want to go out somewhere and see like part of the island. Like, we can get you a taxi. It's $60, $120 something, per $60 per person.
Whoa.
Well, I later learned that a taxi is actually about 70 cents.
Yeah.
So.
That's more like it.
But they're keeping me in the hotel and I have no idea. I've never been to Jamaica. So whatever. I'm like, fine, just pay it, deal with it. So we have them take us to a couple places around town and get lost in town. The food's great. We wander around, eat. Food's amazing. People are helpful. I'm like, I don't know where I am, but I need to go to this place, the Jerk Center, and they're like, go here. Everybody's really friendly, nice. And that day we're waiting for the taxi to come back and pick us up. I forgot my bag on the seat at the restaurant. And I'm leaving the next morning at like 6 a.m. So I call the restaurant, like, I'm realizing this as I'm packing. Call them at 9 p.m. and they're like, "Oh, we found your bag. It's still on the chair."
Oh, okay.
And the Christopher Allen was the manager's name, and he's like, "I'll drive it to you when we close at 11."
Really?
But they wouldn't really let him into the hotel because they're like, "We don't let, you know, anybody locals in." But I called down and they let him in, and I got my bag, and I said, "I really like Jamaica outside of the resort," so I went on to couch surfing. And I just happened to, I joined the couch surfing group for Jamaica, just curious to see what the vibe was. And there was a woman on there that was like, "I need a house sitter. And I'm looking for a house sitter for a month or something." And so I wrote her back, and her place happened to be just a mile from the place that I had just stayed at, which was crazy.
Oh, wow.
And so we talked over Skype and never met. And she's like, "Yep, sure, come down. We'll show you everything." And they left me stuff, and they're like, "If you steal everything, you know, don't send us a postcard from wherever you run off to, wherever you abscond with all of the things, you know, it's the British." So I ended up going back down there like once a year, or a couple times a year, to house sit or watch their stuff for them.
Oh, it's the same person always.
Yep. And then she got sick with cancer died. And then I was there through that process. I'm like, "Well, you guys just deal with your family stuff. Like, I know how the place operates. I can deal the day-to-day. Why don't you guys just deal with the things that actually, you know, matter?" And so we did that. And then the next year, the year after, I can't remember which, the husband called and said, "Hey, I'm going to leave and go on vacation. Come down and house sit again." That was 2 years ago, 2016 or 17, 16. I said, "Sure." So I came down, and the day before he flew out, he died of a heart attack.
Whoa.
And so I'm there again during this whole process, right?
Yeah.
And now I'm with the kids who I'd met when their mom died.
Oh, my God.
And
were they older, adults?
Yeah, they're in their 40s, 50s.
Oh, okay.
So so I went through that process again and met the family from London. They came in and stuff. And so they just got a call a couple months ago, and they're like, "Hey, we need a break. Do you want to come down and see what we've done to the place in the last year and a half?"
All right.
And so I'm going to go down and help them run their little cottage business and go back to it's a nice little villa right on the sea. And
take
my guitar and chill out and go meet people I haven't seen in a year or 2 years.
Catch up.
I wanted to bike the island, but it's crazy. It's madness.
Yeah.
It's not a good idea. I don't think so.
Fair enough. All right. Wow, that's really interesting. So then Jamaica for a month, and then you're off to Mexico maybe?
And then coming back here.
Trains out.
And either biking to Mexico or driving to Mexico. I haven't decided.
All right.
I'll see we'll go where the road takes me when I come back.
Okay. Any plans to go further south?
Yeah, the plan is still to go to Patagonia.
Oh, nice.
And
okay.
I've tried to do that twice now, and I've gotten stuck along the way. So you know how it is when you're traveling with... It's just a guidepost. It's not really a... destination.
More interesting things came up.
And they come up and somebody's like, hey, we have a house in the city. You can live there as long as you want. Just keep an eye on it and pay the utilities. It's like, all right, I'll do that for a while and I'll explore the city.
Oh, that's great.
And okay. When that wears out, I'll go somewhere else, I guess.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I hope to keep in touch with you then and keep up on your travels. What's your website again?
I've got ryansinn.com, ryansinn.com. I finally got it back. There was a musician that changed his name to Ryan Sinn and had it for 10 years. And I just was like, oh, he's not renewing it anymore. I guess I'll take it. And then I've also got, for specifically bike stuff, I've moved that all over to sharethisroad.com.
Oh, do you have your own website on that website?
Yep. So sharethisroad.com is just like, it's got all my bike gear that I'm using, like the every part of the bike, what I paid for it, a link to where I bought it, if I've got that.
Uh-huh.
The journal, daily log of the trips. And
oh, awesome.
The Ryan Sinn one's more technical, and it's got some bike stuff in it, but it's not, you know, the bike thing took up so much information that it kind of needed its own space at a certain point.
Awesome. So, okay, well, I'm going to check those out and follow you then.
Well, it's been a real pleasure. We should do this. You should come to Mexico or wherever, and we'll do another one.
You never know where the wind will take us.
Right?
It doesn't sound like Hong Kong is in your plans, but if you happen to be
that's
in the area,
the next continent. I want to finish this one first, right?
Yeah, that's totally fine. And
so,
Like I said, I traveled around for 2.5 years, and mostly in South America.
Yeah.
So if you need any pointers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, let me know.
All right.
This has been great.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for talking to me.
What a pleasure.
Special thanks to Ryan for coming on the show, and thank you for listening. As usual, for more information, you can go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. I'm going to put up some pictures and some links to Ryan's website and some of the other interesting stuff that we talked about during the show. Thank you once again, and I'll catch you next time.